we are looking at images of resolution, I think might be the best way to sum up what we're doing here. The big quandary was on 353. This business of, being on the wheel. And Philemon says, well, I've gotten off the wheel. And Jung says, well, I'm still on the wheel. And when I got the feeling, Jung was saying, gosh, I should get off the wheel too. But Philemon was saying, you know, get off the wheel, you moron. But that's a dilemma which I think informs this whole business.
Isn't that the wheel of life?
That's the wheel of life.
And why should he get off?
And why should he get off?
Well, isn't it the wheel of suffering?
It's the wheel of life
in the
suffering.
Sense?
Yeah. Now, let me sum up what I think is going on, and it may help put in perspective where we're going. You know, we're back to the spirit and matter issue, I think. There are two ways out of the suffering of life, to transcend it or to go through it. And the Eastern way is to transcend it. And Jung is attracted to that. And I don't think necessarily as an Eastern viewpoint, but he's looking for things like he calls, you know, the star, the son of the fire flower, the black and gold seed with the blue light, as what he's seeking. And if we put that in Jungian jargon for a moment, that would be a conscious relationship to the self. With all that entails in terms of giving one a feeling of meaningful living, giving one the ability to create something that lasts, that's what Jung is trying to get to. And he's toying with the idea, can I get there through transcendence? Because he's kind of pulled that way. In other words, do I have to go through this veil of tears to get there? And that's gnawing at him. And Philemon, for a moment, sounds like he's encouraging Jung to do that. But later we'll see Philemon changes. So then the last image we had of that redeemed condition is the mother. And that's where we stopped on 355, about the middle of column 1. And just to kind of pick up from where I left off, remember we had this guy talking about abstinence in the first part. That would be the transcendence. You reach a sense of permanence by getting above emotions, by getting above desire. And then Jung responds, wait a minute, I wanted to be among men. So that's like, I want to be on the wheel. What he says, which we'll have to keep our eyes on, right before, well, in the paragraph beginning, with these words, the mysterious dark one vanished. But Philemon regarded me with a serious questioning look. Did you take a proper look at him, my son? He said, you will be hearing from him, but come now so that I can fulfill what the dark one prophesies for you. So that sounds like what Jung is about to embark on is this transcendence. But I think what reason I mention it, that there, that is a, I'm going to say inferior from Jung's point of view, for the meaning of his life, way out of the problem. And yet we can't give up this idea of reaching those goals. Jung is just going to get there in a different way. And that's what we're going to hear about later, how you get there. How do you get to conscious selfhood? How do you get to a feeling that you're living your destiny? How do you get to the spark of life that that gives you and still be in life, still fight the battle of life? Okay, so now we go to the last image we've had in this series, the mother. As he spoke these words, he touched my eyes and opened my gaze and showed me the immeasurable mystery. And I looked for a long time until I could grasp it, but what did I see? I saw the night. See, that's not transcendence. That's the darkness he has to go through to get to where he wants to go. I saw the dark earth, and above this, the sky stood gleaming in the brilliance of countless stars. And I saw that the sky had the form of a woman, and sevenfold was her mantle of stars, and it completely covered her. Now, that's where we stopped. And I think we need to look at that. Maybe we can start with your picture, Carol, how your picture illustrates that, and then we'll go to Edinger's commentary on an analogous image.
Well, I'll pass this around so you guys can look at it. If you wouldn't mind just handling it by the cradle back here. A while back in our text, you said that the seed and the star come together. I think that's what that image is, because the comet in our modern science is thought of as a seed. The comet is the seed that seeded Earth with water, which made life possible. And of course, it is also a star. So in the comet, the seed and the star come together. And that's what he speaks about in terms of this mother. Or this, well, they do refer to her as a mother, don't they?
Yeah.
Right. And Philemon calls her the immeasurable mystery. And he says the sky becomes a woman covered in a mantle of stars. And then, not only that, but he says, a voice came from afar and was like a falling star. And that seems to speak about her once again. Because we also think of comets as stars, falling stars, or broom stars sometimes they're called, but they're also identified with the star. So I feel that this image, to me, this is one of the most important images he's come up with. And he hasn't painted it for his book. Because he ends here, you know, he says, well, alchemy said it all, so I'm quitting now.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't made that most important image. To me, it's a hugely important image. So I feel perhaps the unconscious planned it and had me make it, because I didn't really realize what it was until I read our text. And there it was. And this image, he's being sent to the mother. He says he needs the mother. What is she going to do for him? She's going to do something, I think, that has to do with his wholeness.
Yeah, she'll birth him, basically.
Well, do you see what she has? She has the seed in her hand. She's diving towards that wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like she's going to fertilize it to me. To me, it looks like she's the fertilizing star. And that was Kathy's first thought, too. And I agree.
So whatever's in that urn is going to be fertilized.
Yeah.
I buy it.
So something that's been dead and...
from kenosis.
Well, yeah. The whole thing that started this vision was a pithoi, or pithos.
Pithos, yeah.
Plural is pithoi. I don't know what that word means.
A urn.
So when this big, they're about this big.
Yeah, they're huge. They can be any size, and a lot of them are gigantic.
And they're kind of shaped like that.
Well, some of them are shaped just like that.
Well, that would be the bottom.
Yeah.
The top kind of goes in.
Yeah, the top part is hidden by the by the water pulling back.
Mm-hmm. They used to store their oil and
grain
and wine.
But it's almost as though for the mother to complete his wholeness, she has to interact with some part of his wholeness that goes all the way back to kenosis. Whatever that is. That's my idea when I think of it.
I think of an urn as very feminine, too, and so it's like the feminine's fertilizing the feminine. But then him, too, maybe. I don't know. Just playing around with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Those urns are very feminine.
And yeah, they're grail images, too.
It's receptacle. Like the feminine is a receptacle.
Yeah, there's going to be a receptacle. It's like a receptacle for this seed. Yeah. Yeah.
What would you, another Greek word, like kenosis for someone?
K-N-O-S-S-O-S?
It's the...
Is it from Nazi?
No. It's the name of the palace on Crete, which was excavated probably the most. As you can see, I have never taken cow's drawing lessons. It looks something like that.
If you Google P-I-T-H-O-S, that will show you these urns.
And,
I got
wine. Plural is Pithoi, I believe.
Right.
Would these also be related to the, I think they call them the Coptic jars, that they, when they embalmed the Egyptian kings, they put the brain and the liver and the kidneys and the heart in different jars?
These were used for food, mostly.
Also burials.
And burials, okay. I didn't know that.
Very rarely, but I think they found some with skeletons in them.
Oh. We saw... on one of our trips to Italy, we went underneath a church where they had dug out, and there were a lot of burials in those.
The weather.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where are you talking about?
Italy.
Oh, it was in the Naples area, the Campania area.
Were they the smaller?
They were the
ossuary size. Yeah. These are like as big as a person.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, these held a person.
Yeah. So did those, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it was with the idea of rebirth, so it would be the same image.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And if you think about what they held life. They held life for those people. Oil, grain, wine. Those are the things that sustained those societies.
Mm-hmm.
So they were life-giving.
And it was really, as far as our Greek heritage goes, I think it's the first indication of cooperative living, because that palace was a distribution center. So they had all that stuff, and they would contribute it, I guess, and then the palace would redistribute it in times, save it, and then redistribute it in times of scarcity. So it's really a representative of a huge shift in the ability to live cooperatively as a large community.
And plan for future.
And plan for the future. Mm-hmm. And also, you've probably seen the art of that culture. It is pure eros. It is so beautiful. So soft and sinewy and erotic and aesthetically pleasing. And there's not one hard edge in their art. When the Mycenaeans come in, you go, ugh. Yeah, I don't know, can you pass that around?
Yeah.
And I think he's, you know, what his work, we'll see in a minute. I'm going with what Edinger says about this, the analogy to this one, which fits in exactly with what you were saying, Carol. The new level of consciousness that Jung is trying to uncover for himself and for those who want to go that route is Eros. And remember, I got to check with a biblical scholar on this, but I do know a guy who knows Greek and has read and taught the New Testament in Greek. I'm pretty sure every time they use the word love in our English, the Greek is agape. It's not Eros. This is a different... Eros is below the waist, and agape isn't. And that's what he's trying to recover, the spirit and the body together. Well, you want to talk about your other one, or do you want to wait till we go through Edinger?
Well...
Because it fits.
I just made this image without really knowing what it was, and the astrologer Alice Howell saw it and said it was Stella Maris, the star of the sea. Now, usually, she doesn't usually have the infant with her. Usually, she has a cloak of stars, which is how Jung talks about his sky woman here in our text. He says she's got this cloak of stars. Well, Stella Maris in the Catholic tradition has the cloak. She sometimes has the baby, sometimes not. And she's also got, what do they call that raid thing in Catholicism on the head?
Halo.
No, not that one. Torch, crown of torch or something like that?
I have no idea.
Atis wears it.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. Well, anyway, so here she is. Obviously, here's the sea. But here now she herself has become, her head has become the star.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the stars radiate from her head. So in this image, there's some sort of a progression perhaps in that her head is the star. And I always felt that she was giving birth to herself here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's her, I don't know if you can see that down there. Can you see the infant? But for me here, she births herself. But I think she's a version of the Stella Maris, which in our book, Jung seems to be describing in part.
Mm-hmm. Is that not the same as the North Star?
Stella Maris is also called Polaris, guiding star.
Is it the North Star?
Yeah.
So she's the North Star seen by sailors, I guess, huh?
Yes.
Guiding them.
Lady of the Sea, right.
Yes, Stella Maris, Star of the Sea. She's the guiding star also. Mm-hmm. So that sort of connects her to those Sophia attributes we talked about before.
Well, he talks about the star right here, remember where
now,
is that?
Now, Jung talk about... Yeah, he calls her a falling star.
354. I marked it down.
Blue starlight, you know what I mean?
The one God.
Immeasurable distance, and lonely star stands.
Oh, yes, that's the individual star, right?
This is the one God.
And according to our ideas about Sophia, then she is in connection with that one star.
Well, we have to talk about that. I don't know.
Because she guides us.
The difference is, well, are you done with that?
I'm sure.
Okay, then let's go to what Edinger says and then come back to your question. I am puzzled.
And the North Star was the guide for the Underground Railroad, too, because it's the only star that doesn't move in the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's right.
Well, what I... Let me go speak to Carol's question first. At first I thought this figure was Sophia. The difference is, Sophia is rooted in the earth, and this figure is in the sky. But let's see. So, what I was just floundering around, because I was absolutely unable to grasp this, and then you guys put me onto it last week, the sun Sun, Moon, Woman in Book of Revelation. Mm-hmm. And just to give you an image, and here's the picture, that you all got that, right? Mm-hmm. It should be on your handout that I sent to you. She's got the stars on her head, the sun on her head, and her feet are on the moon.
Look how similar that image behind her is to Carol's painting.
Which one?
The flames. Almost.
Here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why I wanted Carol to bring that. Mm-hmm.
To both?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I can't figure out if the Sun Moon Woman is related to Stella Maris in any way. Those feminine figures. This is what's going around in my head.
Yeah, I think so, but we may have to take a detour to get there.
Maybe it's some sort of, well, you know, the myths evolve, so maybe it's some sort of change.
We're definitely seeing, I feel, in Jung's material and in your paintings, the evolution of the myth.
That's what it seems like. Yeah. Like there's a change that's gone on, because no longer are the rays
right.
with stars. Now the head is the light.
Let me think about that.
Which brings her to the rising dawn, aurora. That's how I connect her.
Yeah. I gotta digest that statement.
I know. It's
so
it could be
intuitive. I'm a sensation type.
Bring it to Earth for us, baby.
I
Gary can't say anything.
I can't. I'm tongue-tied. The answer to your question is in the child. So hold on to that intuitive thought, because I'm going to lose it. We'll come back to that. In the vision of Revelation, she has given birth to a child. The child is being taken up to heaven, because if he comes down to earth, he'll be eaten by the dragon. That's the image in the book of Revelation. And this is, I tried to find this in color online, and I couldn't. I think it's in a German, no, it's a Metropolitan Museum of Art. But I think it's from a German monastery. And they give the date, 14th century. So Ettinger is interpreting that picture, that image, in his book Archetype of the Apocalypse. And let's just go through it. We'll have to translate it to fit this context, but at least it will get us started. He cites a woman robed with the sun and so on. That's on page, 98. Then on page 99, he goes through the traditional interpretations of that image, that she represents the church, or she represents the community of Israel, and that Christ is being taken up to heaven. And he says the problem with that is Christ is already in heaven. So, as he says, he considers the interpretations of that image as straining to make things fit. So he's going to go in a different direction. And you go over to page 101. I'll start reading for you. This, top of the page, this imagery is a clear reference to the Greek myth of Leto, who gave birth to Apollo and Artemis. Zeus had sexual relations with Leto, who became pregnant with twins, arousing the jealousy of Hera, who persecuted her rival. And the dragon Python, you see, that's why he brings it back to the book of Revelation, was trying to kill these two kids. That's the implication. The parallel with our apocalypse is very close. Leto is intimately related to the sun and moon, since she really gives birth to this celestial pair, anthropomorphic pair, Apollo and Artemis, implied for the Greeks the cosmic level sun and moon. Now, what he takes to birth, now we're just doing Greek for a moment, of Apollo and Artemis to mean is it's a separation. Two are born. What's that mean? That means that in the Greek psyche, the capacity for reflection is just being born. You know, if you read the Greek drama, there is not a lot of reflection in those stories. It's all lust, murder, passion, no reflective ability. That's what was born in the latter phases of Greek civilization, and then certainly carried on in Christianity. A separation. Separation from desire. The ability to reflect. Now, he compares, now that's the amplification. Now bringing it back to our story. In the Red Book, and in the book of Revelation, one is born. See, so it's a birth of unity, not a birth of separation. Suggesting, and this is the psychological point, what we're dealing with is a fundamental shift in consciousness that has been defined by either or, and by distancing, and by reflection, and by the struggle to separate opposites, to recognize conflict, to a level of consciousness that can unite conflict, that doesn't see opposites, that sees polarity as the opportunity to synthesize. In the biblical story, that can't come down to earth. Because I love this word, my friends and I use it all the time. I don't know if you've seen any of these German movies. It's translated as pig dog. And my friends and I have changed it to mean, how's your like lowest instinctual self doing? How's your pig dog? It's all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But scratch the drugs. As we get older, the primal desirousness of the psyche had not yet been integrated enough at the birth of the Christian eon, birth of Christianity, to allow this possibility to happen. It had to separate from that dragon. That dragon would be crude, destructive desirousness, lust, greed, putting it most simply. That had not yet been integrated. So the possibility of unification is there, but it can't be made real. Now, in Jung's vision, he is the child of this woman, which to me suggests that what he is birthing is this ability to synthesize, and the opposites we've seen all along have been matter and spirit, to synthesize matter and spirit in a coherent lifestyle. And it doesn't have to be taken up to heaven anymore. Because what he's done all through the Red Book is deal with that dragon. He's faced his desirousness. It has overcome him. He's endured it. And he is beginning to see that out of desire can come meaning. And that within desire is the capacity of the psyche to transform desire.
And that's why he stays on the wheel.
He will stay on the wheel until he's done with his job of going through it and coming out unified. He wants unification. He thinks he can get it by getting above it. And now he's saying, no, I got to stay on the wheel. And pretty soon Philemon is going to say just the opposite of what he said before, which is basically stay on the wheel. So Jung has resisted that pull toward aloof peace and gone down to the battle of life, because that's the route he wants to take to reach selfhood. Now, to Carol's questions. You see, I think the fact that we're seeing in this story a fundamental shift of Western consciousness moving from having to live through conflict to seeing synthesis as the challenge put by conflict, and realizing it is solvable. We can now solve this problem. And that's what Jungian psychology is dealing with. This is how you do it. And that changes the feminine to being the source of light in your picture, I think.
So the ability and desire to deal with the conflict between spirit and man.
Yeah.
Say it again.
That's the, that is one example of the opposites. Him is Tony Wolf and his marriage. And what he's realizing is, I have to accept both. Because beyond that, there is a unification of my own personality, which is what I'm seeking. And this is the only way I'm going to get it. And it will also resolve the outer problem. And see, that changes the feminine. That's why your pictures are a little different. Because you are painting the feminine that lives under that united, under the possibility of that way of living.
Could we say then that Stella Maris is an ability to guide us through the unconscious, since she is the star of the sea?
Yeah.
Toward the birth of the divine child in us, which would be our individuality.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that changes the feminine, both men and women.
Yeah.
Could we say that?
Yep. And I don't know whether
in that era, and that would be era.
That would be finding a way of living beyond power.
Okay.
Beyond, I push you around, or you push me around. I put you down, you put me down. Competition, winning and losing. It's being together.
It's being able to synthesize. There's the polarity is there, but being able to find a way to live within that.
Live it, I think, until it goes
away.
The third comes along.
Okay.
So the feminine principle itself is evolved or changed by this process in man.
And women.
Well, yeah, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Again, human beings. And so that's why so I'm going back to your question, she doesn't radiate light, she is the light. I think that's another way of saying you're depicting a level of consciousness that can live the conflict of life towards unity. And doesn't seek to evade the crucifixion. The way to put it is, we start suffering the crucifixion.
So it's a level of consciousness that can what?
Live through the conflict, accept the conflict, and stick it out until the conflict resolves. And that the possibility of real unity is being birthed for the first time in our history. So the spirit isn't anything apart anymore.
So I have a question. Could we say that this is an evolution of not the God image, but the goddess image?
They go together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Or you could say the recovery of God's feminine side.
Okay.
So that not only are we recovering the feminine, it's being birthed as well in the other...
In the other side.
In the divine realm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this was so helpful to me because...
Apollo slew the python in Delphi. Mm-hmm. Writing about that, I didn't quite understand. I had a completely different switch on it, so I'm going to have to really look at this again. If what he was doing was slaying lust and greed.
Plus lust, greed, resentment, hatred,
power.
Well, and that's interesting because Apollo shared Delphi with Dionysus.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, he wasn't in total control. He shared with
him. I see, right.
During certain months, right, during dark.
The more I'm reading, the more they're just saying they really shared a lot. I mean, even though Apollo took care of most of the year where the Pythians was giving her readings, they're getting more and more information that Dionysus was, rituals were there as well. So,
just all the time.
Mm-hmm. That except, of course, Dionysus doesn't get the, whatever it was, but anyway.
One of the other images that we had talked about in the last class was Ariadne, and she has something to do with Dionysus.
Oh, they do, big time. You might want to read this. This is the villa, the work that they're doing at the villa. I brought one for you.
Thank you.
But anyway, yeah, but this is all about Ariadne and Dionysus, the coming together of spirit and matter in a very big way.
That's a couple of comments.
Yeah. Probably not, but
they came up in your brain for a reason, so they must be real.
One was Marion Woodland talking about one of her clients who came to her first, I think her first reading. There was a tombstone, and on it said, daughter of, mother of, wife of, didn't name anybody. And she felt like, realized she had never really been herself. She had cancer. The last dream she had before she died, there was a golden child being born out of her head, which made me think of that. That's my one comment. The other is, now that we know that stars are suns, or the sun is a star, I wonder where that fits.
Well, I think it's the guiding light.
So could we say that Jung's mother here is a new variation on Stella Maris?
I think so.
Because of her cloak of stars?
Yeah. And that what she's... Well, I don't know if she's a different woman. She's giving birth in a different way. That may make her a different woman.
She's given birth to a serpent.
But Jung as well. He is her child, right?
Yes. Well, she's going to take him...
She will take him as a child under certain circumstances.
If he sacrifices.
Yeah. And so, are you okay so far? Let's go on to that comment of yours, Carol. that she does give birth to the godly serpent. See, that godly serpent, it's not an ungodly serpent, it's a godly serpent. And remember, the Gnostics thought Christ, thought the serpent in the Garden of Eden, in certain Gnostic sects, interpreted the serpent in the Garden of Eden as Christ. And again, now, I'm taking it psychologically, what that would mean, I believe, is that this dragon becomes not what destroys us, but gives us the emotional situations in life through which we can become conscious of ourselves.
I was reading an article written by a young woman in the Kenyan Review, and I can't tell you what the whole thing was about, but what struck me was she wrote about desire plus the obstacles that you face and what that leads to. So the desirousness, the desire that you have, you know, in that, you're going to face specific obstacles.
And I would add complications.
That then lead to, she was going more on creativity, but I mean,
yeah.
Eventually it does.
Sure.
Grows creativity.
Yeah, this is about creativity.
Complication.
But here's, you say, the dragon comes up and has the possibility of either destroying us or giving us
yes, definitely.
Consciousness. It's not a guarantee, at least not a
no, but you see, up to this point, it didn't have the possibility of leading us to consciousness. Because the ego, Western ego, is too weak.
Which is why maybe Philemon at first told him no, transcendence. And
could be.
His mind.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Certainly could be. So basically, what I get out of all this through Edinger's help is what we're seeing here is the possibility of unity. Synthesized unity. And that's what this book's been about the whole time anyway. Philemon and Baucis, and the old man, the young woman. Desire and meaning, lust and spirit.
It seems to me that the ego is like the fulcrum of this whole thing.
And there is a developing ego.
Right.
Absolutely.
It's got to be strong enough.
Got to be strong.
To hold. It's got to be that strong enough vessel.
Yeah.
To contain what's coming.
And I think not only, I mean, or maybe I could say there's an irony, as it gets stronger, it becomes less dominating.
The ego.
The ego. It's a weak ego that has to dominate.
But there's a strength in the ego that can stand up to the huge demands made on it by the inner world.
Right.
So it has to be strong.
Right.
Just.
But reoriented toward Eros.
It becomes in relationship.
In relationship, yeah.
With life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's how I get it, anyway.
It seems like there was a quote somewhere, maybe in Marina. The press or whatever that talked about the entire thing of alchemy is whether the vessel is strong enough.
I'm sure.
The quote. Exactly.
I'm sure you could.
Seems like
you wouldn't have to go far to find that.
Yeah,
that it can't break.
Mm-hmm. And that's the whole trick of the mark or something.
Mm-hmm.
So this commingling,
right?
Is this speaking about where his shadow is projected into others?
No, I think. Well, yes, it would include that, but I think it's bigger. See, what is a bit tricky here? Commingling for a while sounds negative, but it's positive. Commingling means getting into life and dealing with the mess of things. And she's saying, you can't have me till you purify yourself. Meaning, he won't reach the final meaning of his life until he has lived it. But one could say, well, so then, let me just purify myself now and be with you. That's an option. It's just not the one he's going to take. That would be the Buddhist example. That would be the Buddhist option.
I guess I wondered when she was talking about, when he was writing this part, if the influence of the time, the collective, was part of that commingling that he had to work through.
And that's just life. And the fact that he's gotten caught in this marriage triangle, his neighbors don't like him, the battles with the psychoanalytic community, that's the way he has to go. He's getting clear within himself.
The loneliness that...
The loneliness that came along with it.
Yeah.
All the misunderstandings.
So, being freed from the commingling...
would be death. Would be what you achieve by the time you've lived life.
Well, you deal with the mess of life in a way where you're projecting, and then you deal with the mess of life in a way where hopefully you've taken back
right.
to those projections.
Right. But I think the commingling is you can't withdraw a projection before you make it. So he's realizing, I got to get my hands dirty.
Well, he'd be full of projections already, wouldn't he, as a young man?
Yeah, I mean, he is just getting straight his grasp of what living is. It is getting in there, having successes and failures, being with people. Maybe it's a conscious relationship, maybe it's not a conscious relationship, but he wants to be with them, and this is what he's got to do. He can't seek moral purity and live at the same time.
She seems to be indicating that there's some way, some accomplishment of dealing with the commingling before he can become as a child. So there's something he achieves along those lines.
Right. But I think what's so tricky here, she makes it sound like it's something you can do and then be with her. But it's a trick on her part. The only way to get to what she is offering is to live so that you get that at the end of your life. That's how I understand
it.
This is very dangerous for a guy that he seeks peace and rest and lack of struggle. And that's classic puer.
That's the negative aspect of the child.
Right, right. And he's getting it straight, I can't do that. And I think the reason I say that is the next section, this man with the turban appears, and the first, second, third, fourth, the first big paragraph in this moment, the man with the turban appears, and he's been taught by women how to heal sick children, how to deal with wounds. Well, if you were with mommy, you wouldn't need all that. So he rejects the invitation to solve this easily and join a life of peace, and what he's given then is the very ability to deal with the wounds that come when you don't seek a life of peace.
I sort of thought of that man with the turban as the introduction of an alchemical.
Well, it could be, considering we realize that alchemy came from the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. And, well, it came... Didn't it begin there in where Iran and Iraq
yeah.
are?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a culture based on Iraq.
Mm-hmm. I feel the same connections.
Okay. So when you read the poetry of Rumi, he's in the mess of it.
Uh-huh.
He's not above it,
right.
rising above it. He's in the mess of it and invites that mess in.
Okay, now it gets more complicated. What do you think? Reply, I bring healing. Women taught me this art. See where I am. They know how to heal sick children. Well, you don't deal with sick children if you're living in paradise. So that's why I said I think that the we have to be aware of what this woman is saying can be a little tricky.
Now wait, this is what the turban guy is
saying. Turban guy, yeah, who we're told is an Arab. Mm-hmm. A Turk. I guess Turks aren't Arabs, are they?
I don't think so.
But they're in the same culture, but right. Biologically they're different than Arabs, I believe. I remember, did you see, Omar Sharif plays the shopkeeper, and it's a story between him and a Jewish boy. Mm-hmm. What's his name? Monsieur Ibrahim. He says, I'm a Turk, I'm not an Arab. Anyway, but whatever it is, it's the Islamic culture, because they're all Muslims.
Isn't Turkey today, it's a culture that's kind of halfway between.
Yeah.
Very international, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, what I wanted to get to was... women don't know this art, they know how to heal sick children. Do your wounds burn you? Healing is at hand. Give ear to counsel and do not be incensed. I retort, what do you want? To tempt me, to mock me? What are you thinking? He interrupted, I bring you the bliss of paradise, the healing fire, the love of women. And the footnote says, other passages, this is a reference to say, what about polygamy? Ha, suddenly paradise gets a little complicated. So that paradise isn't the same paradise as just getting rid of life's complications and seeking simplicity. That's the paradise of going through what you have to go through to reach a meaningful understanding of yourself.
That's pretty much what he's having to face.
And that's what he's having to face. Yeah, exactly. I thought that to me confirmed where I was going with this. That this is really about Jung's struggle with Tony Wolfe. Not just his struggle with Tony Wolfe, his version of the struggle with opposites. And he's learning about the struggle with opposites by facing his own particular version of that struggle. And realizing that's the way I got to go to reach any kind of peaceful satisfaction of life. And now we pick up what happens when you do that. Are you thinking, I asked, of the descent into the fog swamp, the dissolution in the many, the scattering, dismembering? See, the fog swamp would be springtime. We had the frogs image earlier as well. So what he's saying is, I have to go the route of dissolution, which means accepting all the different parts of myself and trying to live them even though it's complicated. I got my wife. I got my lover. I got my family. I got my career. I have persona issues, but I can't allow those persona issues to limit what I write. These are all the things that he has to accept, which all feel contradictory to him at the moment.
And if he accepts them, then what?
Then they will synthesize into old man Jung. Now, Philemon says, and just the opposite of what he was saying earlier, you have not yet experienced the dismembering. You should be blown apart and shredded and scattered to the winds. Men are preparing for the Last Supper with you. What will remain of me, I cried, nothing but your shadow. You will be, and here I would take the word shadow not in the Jungian sense, but in, because that concept hadn't been developed yet, but in the way it appears in the Odyssey, where the I think it's more often translated as shades of the dead. So you could say his dead spirit, or the spirit that lives after death, something like that. Yeah, well, let's take a break, because I want to pursue this a little bit, and I think we need to stretch a little bit.
I like the, Scott Peck writes about the simplicity, which is thinking in very straightforward black and white terms, but then he talks about the simplicity beyond complexity.
Yeah.
His writing kind of goes back to the first simplicity, but as he said, I think that it's a good concept that there is a simplicity beyond complexity.
So
you have to go through complexity again.
Yeah, and you know, in this stuff, remember we had him kind of criticizing the one God idea, but now he's coming back to the one God idea, but it's after having gone through the multiplicity, and that one God idea is the stella maris, the guidance you get from inside. So let's walk around.